Good morning, everyone. Well, in the pre-dawn hours, as I got in my car on the way to work this morning, my Algerian driver on the way here to WNYC said to me, "Big water, small dam," referring to events in the Middle East.
Yeah.
It's all about a center of mass and the power of events which are driving politics both in the Middle East and all around the world. Where is the center of mass in Egypt and the Arab world this morning? An exploration of tipping points all morning long here on The Takeaway. All our events are driving the Egyptian government, which is trying to play catch-up. You saw that all weekend long, President Mubarak giving a speech, changing some members of his government, not satisfying protesters in the street. A million-man march is planned for all Egyptians tomorrow. The opposition itself trying to come together, show at least a semblance of unity, having difficulty with that. And chaos looms, of course, in every neighborhood in Cairo and throughout the country.
Yes.
And that is terrifying individuals, and we'll have reports on that all morning. Even Washington's response is being driven by events. Let's begin in Cairo, where the mood is best described as tense. Here is the BBC's Kevin Connolly.
Down in the streets with the protesters gathered, they're talking about these being days of rage in Cairo. But as much as anything else, they're days of fear. We are driving through one of the city's leafiest suburbs now, just a few hundred meters from the banks of the Nile. It is dark and deserted, except for groups of vigilantes gathered on what seemed like every street corner, sometimes only 40 or 50 metres apart. The last checkpoint we went through included a guy who was armed with a bullwhip, somebody carrying a golf club, another man with a hunting rifle. They are, they say, householders who see Egypt as being forced to choose between order and anarchy rather than dictatorship and democracy. Good evening.
Hello. Harper's BBC.
What's your name?
Hassan Gaffer.
Nice to meet you. I'm Kevin. We're just asking you how things have been at your checkpoint tonight.
For now, it's very good. Nothing happened so far. There were two cars stolen yesterday, and we found them, and everything is okay. But other places are not very okay.
What's going on in Cairo? Are there rumours of looting and robbery, or is there really looting and robbery?
Yeah, there is. There is robbery.
And you're prepared to use force if you have to?
Yeah, of course. There are families. Our families are in the house, so we have to use force.
It was stories of widespread robbery and looting that brought the vigilantes onto the streets. They know the authorities may have spread the rumours deliberately to sap the will to protest, but they are taking no chances.
Sweet.
At one checkpoint, we found polite young soldiers of the Egyptian army alongside the raggle-taggle army of civilians. Their presence a reminder that the Mubarak administration has not abandoned the streets. It's merely, for now at least, replaced hated police officers with well-respected soldiers. The vigilantes approve.
We've just been called over now by our third patrol of the night.
Oh,
I think we saw you last night. Good evening. Good to see you. How are things tonight?
It's better.
Negative.
We had today the police, and we kicked them out of Zamalek because we don't trust the police anymore, so... And as you see, there's the army forces, and they're leaving after 2 hours, so we continue to protect our own neighborhood.
So this is citizens together with the Egyptian army and no
yes,
police?
No, we are all citizens.
The suburban roadblocks are a reminder that plenty of influential middle-class Egyptians, even ones who want political change, don't want the kind of change that brings instability. Manning the barricades is a new experience, for example, for Ahmed El Mufti, a 56-year-old investment banker.
They're trying to just calm a little bit the street. I mean, if a car coming, checking the license, checking anything in a safe manner.
To the outsider, it's quite an intimidating scene.
Yes.
A lot of men with clubs and sticks. But you do hear the occasional gunshot. There's a guy there. That's a pretty big hunting rifle that guy is carrying there.
Yeah. This is my twin brother, by the way. It's mainly used to scare. The pistol that kills. This does not kill.
The BBC's Kevin Connolly reporting through the night in Cairo as individuals and citizens of Egypt weigh this terrifying trade-off between anarchy and a political awakening that we've been reporting on for more than a week now.
And joining in some cases, taking those things into their own hands.
Indeed. Vigilantes, and of course, the police are on the street this morning. Reports all weekend long that the police were absent, which motivated many of these individual neighborhoods to make for their own security. Stephen Cook joins us now, Middle East expert for the Council on Foreign Relations, joining us from Washington, D.C. Stephen, you were in Cairo just a few weeks ago. Is this even imaginable? A few days ago. Is this even imaginable? What's going on now?
No, it really is not. Most people regarded President Mubarak's regime as quite stable, among the most stable countries in the region. This is unprecedented events, but not entirely unpredictable. Mubarak's regime was basically held together by the threat of force and violence. And once the fear factor melted away, it was only a matter of time before people were able to take matters into their own hands and demand political change.
Now, there's a million-man march planned for all Egyptians, much of this organized online as well as through the media. There have been attempts to try to shut down the media in Egypt. The Egyptian government is playing sort of political catch-up here, reshuffling the deck, you might say. Is it possible for Mubarak to stay ahead of this?
Well, they're certainly trying to. As you said, they are trying to do everything possible to prevent the people from coming out into the streets. But they're well beyond that. You don't need social media any longer to get people out on the streets. When I was in Cairo and last Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, you certainly did at the beginning of these protests need Twitter, need Facebook. Now this has become a matter of the entire nation. So I would expect that the next million-man march, which is going to be called for Friday, will still bring out many, 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 many people.
Indeed, I was hearing over the weekend that the fact that they shut the internet down late in the week actually encouraged people to go into the street to communicate. Is that your sense?
That's exactly what happened. They started communicating the old-fashioned way, by word of mouth.
And, what about the opposition itself? It seems to be outpaced by events here. We have conflicting reports whether Al-Baradei and this Muslim Brotherhood coalition can actually hold.
Well, this mass uprising is largely leaderless, and Al-Baradei was trying to give it leadership and direction, but it's unclear whether he'll be able to do so.
Stephen Cook, stay with us. Plenty to talk about here. The events in Cairo, the government, Washington, and the opposition itself trying to stay ahead of events. The people are speaking in Cairo and around Egypt. Stephen Cook is a Middle East expert for the Council on Foreign Relations. Full coverage of what's going on in Cairo and the Middle East. Stay with us.
Since WNYC's first broadcast in 1924, we've been dedicated to creating the kind of content we know the world needs. In addition to this award-winning reporting, your sponsorship also supports inspiring storytelling and extraordinary music that is free and accessible to all. To get in touch and find out more, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.